Special Testimonies, Series B, Number 2. Testimonies for the Church, containing letters to physicians and ministers and instructions to Seventh-day Adventists. Introduction. And he said unto me, Son of man, go, get thee unto the house of Israel, and speak with my words unto them. For thou art not sent to a people of strange speech and of an hard language, but to the house of Israel, not to many people of a strange speech and of a hard language, whose words thou canst not understand. Surely had I sent thee to them, they would have hearkened unto thee. Son of man, I have made thee a watchman unto the house of Israel, therefore hear the word at my mouth, and give them warning from me. When I say unto the wicked, Thou shalt surely die, and thou givest him not warning, nor speakest to warn the wicked from his wicked way to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Yet if thou warn the wicked, and he turn not from his wickedness, nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity, but thou hast delivered thy soul. Again, when a righteous man doth turn from his righteousness and commit iniquity, and I lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die. Because thou hast not given him warning, he shall die in his sin, and his righteousness which he hath done shall not be remembered, but his blood will I require at thine hand. Nevertheless, if thou warn the righteous man that the righteous sin not, and he doth not sin, he shall surely live, because he is warned, and thou hast delivered thy soul. Ezekiel 3, 4-6 and 17-21. Chapter 1, The Great Controversy. Washington, D.C., July 25, 1904. This morning, long before day, I received a blessing from God. Before this blessing came, I felt that my strength was leaving me. I had great suffering through my whole body. It seemed as if the entire system were being crushed. Every nerve and sinew was in pain. I thought of calling up the family, and then I said aloud, "They cannot give me relief." I prayed to the great physician to change the condition of things, to let me feel his healing power, and relief came. The Lord hath given me this message for our churches. Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet, and show my people their transgression and the house of Jacob their sins. The whole of the 58th chapter of Isaiah is to be regarded as a message for this time, to be given over and over again. There is a strife between the forces of good and evil, between the loyal and the disloyal angels. Christ and Satan are not at an agreement, and they never will be. In every age, the true Church of God has engaged in decided warfare against satanic agencies. Until the controversy is ended, the struggle will go on between wicked angels and wicked men on the one side, and holy angels and true believers on the other. There is not and cannot be a natural enmity between fallen angels and fallen men. Both are evil. Through apostasy, both cherish evil sentiments. Wicked angels and wicked men are leagued in a desperate confederacy against the good. Satan knew that if he could induce men, as he had induced angels, to unite with him in his rebellion, he would have a strong force with which to carry on his rebellion. In the hosts of evil, there is jarring and discord, but they are all firm allies in fighting against heaven. Their one aim is to disparage God, and their great numbers lead them to entertain the hope that they will be able to dethrone omnipotence. When Adam and Eve were placed in the Garden of Eden, they were innocent and sinless in perfect harmony with God. Enmity had no natural existence in their hearts. But when they transgressed, their nature was no longer sinless. They became evil, for they had placed themselves on the side of the fallen foe, doing the very things that God specified they should not do. Had there been no interference on the part of God, man would have formed a firm alliance with Satan against heaven. But when the words were spoken, "I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, it shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise his heel," Satan knew that although he had succeeded in making human beings sin, although he had led them to believe his lie and to question God, although he had succeeded in depraving human nature, some arrangement had been made whereby the beings who had fallen would be placed on vantage ground, their nature renewed in godliness. He saw that his action in tempting them would react upon himself, and that he would be placed where he could not become conqueror. In the statement, "I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed," God pledged himself to introduce into the hearts of human beings a new principle, a hatred of sin, of deception, of pretense, of everything that bears the marks of Satan's guile.